Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We are 2 days away from the official start of autumn. Time to put away your spade, your hoe, and other gardening paraphernalia, right? Wait a second. The answer to that question is no. Fall is actually a fairly important time for the health of your home garden. What gardeners do now and into the winter to prepare their soil and seeds could have an important impact on what comes up in the spring. In fact, what comes up right now. In fact, you can actually plant vegetables and ornamentals right now. Paula Gross is Associate Director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens and author of the Southeast Native Plant Primer, 225 Plants for an Earth-Friendly Garden. We invited her back because she also writes for Fine Gardening Online, and she has lots of advice for fall planters. Paula, welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
Nice to have you here. Sam Humphrey is also with us. He is a horticultural agent for the North Carolina Cooperative Extension. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And David Blackley is one of our other returning champions. If I could only get his name right, David Blackley is owner of Renfro Hardware and General Merchandise in Matthews. Good morning, David. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike.
So, Paula, everybody thinks of gardening in the spring. That seems natural. I don't know how many people think of gardening in the fall, but evidently it is a good time.
Absolutely. In fact, I like to think of October as the April of the fall in the gardening world. There's so much activity, so much to do in April. Well, there's really so much to do in October as well. Like in the fall, you've got planting, planning, and prepping. And planting especially, a lot of my specialty is like ornamentals, and your landscape is your trees, your shrubs, and your perennials. It's the really the ideal time for planting those three things.
And in fact, Sam, North Carolina Arboretum says fall is the best time to plant. That seems counterintuitive to me because it's about to freeze. Why is that so?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, with as Paula was saying, you know, it's the best time to plant those woody perennials. And that's because when they go, they're starting to go dormant in the wintertime, they're focusing their energy on growing their roots rather than, you know, above ground growth. So, you know, planting them in the winter gives them, you know, a great foundation and, you know, helps them emerge even stronger in the spring. And that's why it's always best to plant those woody perennials, your trees, your shrubs in the fall so that when springtime comes, they're ready to just explode once that warmth in the sun comes to them.
There are also, it strikes me, fewer bugs in the fall while you're working in the garden. So that can make it a little more pleasurable for people. But what else, Paula, is different about fall gardening as opposed to what you do in the spring?
Well, I think, you know, Sam said it in that you're when you're looking at the plant, and I really like I'm a big advocate of getting to know your plant. So spending time observing your plants, you get to see their cycles, and planting in the fall, you really observe the sort of the changes in them. You can see things in your garden that you don't see in spring. It's a seasonality. It's a perspective thing. The root growth is important. It's also a great time to look at unwanted plants in your landscape and remove those because exactly what you said, it's really more pleasant for the gardener. It's a great, wonderful, we love being out in the fall. And so it's not a time to go in and hibernate yet. It's a time to get out there and interact with your garden in a really pleasant way.
David, a lot of people may know that fall is a great time of year to be in the garden. A lot of people may not know. I'm just curious from somebody in the retail business who sells plants and all the things that go along with home improvement and fixing up your garden. How does this season in terms of retail compare to spring?
It's not quite as busy volume-wise, but it's just as busy project-wise, we tell people there's not a day of the year that you shouldn't be planting something and harvesting something. Our climate lends itself to 365 days of good planting of the proper seed or plant or tuber. And certainly, if you're a food gardener, you should be able to eat out of your garden every day of the year. It's like getting on a merry-go-round. Once you're on it, you're on.
And Paula, you agree with that, because you told us that you can, I think the last time you were here, you told us that you can plant almost anything through the fall and into the early winter. Almost anything?
Well, vegetable-wise, no.
Okay.
Ornamental plant-wise, yes. There are a few things that I don't recommend planting in the fall. So those few things are your marginally hardy plants. In other words, plants that are just barely suited for our winters here, maybe palms and things like that. I also don't recommend trying to plant or install large evergreen plants this time of year. But other than that, as far as the landscape, you really are pretty safe. Not summer annuals, obviously,
right,
but fall annuals. So the cool weather annuals, the pansies, the snapdragons, the kales, this is the perfect time to plant those.
Is most of what gets done in the fall doing what she just talked about, planting things that you will enjoy now? Or is it really also getting the garden ready for the spring and beyond?
Yeah, it's both and. So you can be harvesting crops that you've planted earlier in the season during the fall. You can be planting crops that you can harvest during the fall, as well as crops that you're going to be harvesting in the winter. You know, if you want to have a good winter harvest, then you have to plant in the fall, and you've got to plant early, like now, so that your crops are mature by the time the hard frost comes so that they can handle it. And you know, it might also involve a little, you know, protection, you know, to extend that season. But depending upon the crop, you can, you know, harvest in the fall, you can harvest in the winter, and you can overwinter something to harvest in the spring, as well as all the prepping and planning and all the other things we've discussed.
How far away are we, Sam, from that first frost?
Yeah, so generally that's going to come early November for our area. You know, there's always some wiggle room with the frost. That's, you know, generally what we can expect, you know, that first of November. But with, you know, with everything changing with our climate, you know, it can be earlier, it could be later. But generally, you know, early November is when you need to be expecting that hard frost.
So if I've done the math right, Paula, and I probably haven't, that's 5 or 6 weeks from now we're looking at. What can be done? What can be established? And if it's a vegetable, what can be harvested if you're planting it today by the time the frost arrives?
Well, planting your winter greens is what would have been happening the past month up to about now. So if you are wanting to start from seed, things like kale and collards and other greens, you need to get those in right away. But you can also buy starts. And so, like David, I'm sure, sells those at Renfro's, already started greens. And so you've still got, you know, now the next few weeks to get those in. As far as harvesting, I think, you know, that depends on what you did several months ago. So if you've still got tomatoes hanging on, you may be harvesting those. Certainly pumpkins, winter squashes, those are coming in. But harvesting depends on what happened 2 months ago. But now is definitely the time to get those greens in for winter harvesting.
Let's talk about those starts, David, since obviously you and other forgive the expression, the big box stores, which you are not, they also have these things available for people. What should they be looking at when they come in?
Well, basically, if you're doing starts or seeds, what you really are looking at is not what the temperature is, it's what the length of the day is. If you think about it, all plants live outside, so all plants are sensitive to day length. Right now, we're at the equinox. The days are diminishing in length, so there are varieties that thrive and get established at diminishing length. Once we get past December 21st, the days are increasing in length, and there's another wave of plants to plant. So a lot of plants, whether it's kale, for instance, can be done by seed or by plants. And kale, for instance, is not as phytosensitive as other varieties and other perennials. So really, it's just a matter of getting in tune with the length of the day and the seasons. And we try to remind people that the first frost is about Halloween and the last frost is about tax day. and there are plants that can, you got a lot of wiggle room. You can plant before or after. And then there are certain plants that need to be planted after December 21st, for instance, as the days are only getting longer.
So the easy way to remember the frost dates is that they're the two scariest dates of the year. Halloween and tax day.
You know, always try to remember garlic gets planted around Dracula time, which is okay. Halloween time.
Which is probably why that's part of the legend. We have a question from one of our listeners, Kim. Where can you buy native plants and non-GMO vegetables locally? I'm not sure to ask that question of.
I can answer the native plants part. So this is the wonderful opportunity this time of year for two local botanical gardens have plant sales, and they're excellent plant sales. And both of them focus very heavily on native plants, especially the UNC Charlotte plant sale. And that is October 6th and 7th this year. And then the Wing Haven sale is October 12th through the 14th. So definitely for native plants there. Non-GMO vegetables, I will pass that on to the gentleman to answer.
Certainly as far as seeds and plants that we have at RemFros, everything is non-GMO, always has, always will be. Down the street, the Matthews Community Farmers Market is a farmers only market. Everything there is non-GMO. Sometimes if you go into the grocery store, it needs to be labeled organic, certified organic, to maybe have a good chance to know when it's non-GMO. But best way is to grow it yourself. That's the real way to know.
And you can do that from seed, or could you do that from a starter plant that's not necessarily non-GMO?
All starter plants that we ever come across are non-GMO. That's a definite.
Okay.
There are lots of reasons a small grower that would grow for us would use non-GMO seeds. For one thing, the record keeping and the licensing. But rest assured, if you're buying across the counter from a farmer at a farmer's market or from a small store, a little box store instead of a big box store, you can be rest assured it's non-GMO for lots of economic reasons. And I would imagine you'd be hard pressed to find a GMO start even at a big box store. And that it also includes blueberries, raspberries, figs, that sort of thing. The GMO crops are for big agribusiness people. That's the grocery store people.
Yes, Sam is doing a lot of nodding in recognition of that. Sam, you want to chime in on that in the time we have remaining here, about a minute?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And just as David said, you know, your average person is not really going to run into GMOs in any crops or, you know, starts that they're buying. You do need to look at it when you're purchasing food, you know, that you're going to consume, because, you know, the GMOs are really, you know, they're really just for those commodity crops. You really are only seeing those in the commodity crops or, you know, in the food that you, you know, have the ability to consume. But generally with your, you know, seeds at these, you know, small and larger box stores, as well as for, you know, your starts at the market, you're not going to run into them.
Folks listening can write in with their questions for the rest of this hour if you'd like to have some questions answered about your fall gardening or your spring gardening, for that matter, answered. You can do it at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back after this short break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about fall gardening with three experts on the topic. Paula Gross is the former associate director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Garden and the author of the Southeast... the Southeast Native Plant Primer, 225 plants for an earth-friendly garden. San Humphrey is a horticultural agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension. And David Blackley is owner of Renfro Hardware out in Matthews. It's an institution for people in that part of the world. In case you live someplace else, you ought to try it out once. Sam, what should people be doing right now, today, this morning, to get their fall gardens ready? What are there things that we should do first, second, third?
Yeah, so right now you need to be, clearing that area, to be prepping that soil, either to, plant something for the fall to, or winter, or to be preparing for the spring. So right now I would be suggesting, if clean up those summer crops, start preparing for that next season, whichever, you decide. And at, the main thing you need to be focused on is the health of your soil. And, right now the soil tests that we offer at Cooperative Extension Service are free right now until December. In December, they start, but they're $4 a piece. So right now is the perfect time to, do some soil tests and start preparing for that next season.
What's entailed in that? What does the homeowner have to do to get that soil tested?
Yeah, great question. So we at our office here in Mecklenburg County, right off of West Boulevard near the airport, you can come pick up free soil tests. I'll tell you everything you need to know. Essentially, you're just going to get an average of the areas that you care about, whether that's a bed, whether that's a lawn, what have you, whatever you care about, you'll get an average of that space, essentially getting soil core samples, if you will. And you'll send those to the NCSU lab in Raleigh. All you have to do is pay for postage. You'll get your results emailed back within 2 weeks. And they'll have some recommendations for you, and I'll be able to help you with those as well. If you have any questions or contact our master gardeners, they'll be able to help you with your questions as well.
That, my friend, is quicker than the DMV, which is amazing. What do people, when you talk about getting the soil ready, whether you know what the soil is comprised of or not, what does that mean? Because all good gardeners say it begins with the soil, and that soil is not dirt. So what does that mean to get ready?
Yeah, so we're talking the pH, we're talking nutrients, and we're talking the microbiology within the soil. So we want to bring all of those factors together to create a healthy soil environment for our plant roots to thrive. So if the pH is off, certain plants are gonna, have problems. We, want your pH to be about, 6.5. And then, if you're lacking in certain nutrients, that can be very detrimental to your plant growth. As well as if you're, lacking in soil biology, then you're kind of putting yourself at, at less chance of success. So really, focusing on those three aspects in particular can really help lead to future success.
So if you don't know any of that, Paula, if you just go to the hardware store and you buy some potting soil or some topsoil and you throw it on the garden, is that going to do the trick?
You could tell I wanted to answer that. if you don't know anything, add compost to your garden. It has nutrients. It has the ability to feed your microorganisms. It has soil moisture holding capacity. There's really nothing bad about compost. So this time of year, if you're talking vegetable gardening, adding compost to your vegetable garden also is a fine time to add a layer of compost to your perennial garden or your flower beds. You can never really go wrong with that.
Compost is like the probiotic for soil. It's like your kimchi or your yogurt or something for your gut biology. Your gut biology is just as important as the soil biology. And we try to get every customer. We keep cases of those soil boxes too for the county at this end of the county. We try to get everybody to test their soil, because if you go to the doctor, they're going to do a blood work and a urinalysis to know where you stand. And you don't know where you stand in your garden if you don't get a test. And it's free until December.
So once again, Sam, for people who are hearing this for the first time, because I didn't know you could do it for free or at all. How do you do it again? You have to go to you personally?
Yeah. So our address, our office is 2415 Lester Street in Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28202. So you come to our office, I'll give you as many soil test boxes as you would like. I'll walk you through it. And we also have those at Renfro, as he said, and at some of your local libraries. Our master gardeners stock those in there as well. So you've really got a lot of options, and so whatever's most convenient for you, come get a soil test, get it tested, and it's really going to pay dividends for you.
So here's a big question: to till or not to till? Some experts say leave the soil untilled in gardens because all it does is disrupt the soil structure, create more erosion, kills earthworms, etc. You agree or disagree with that, or what should we do, Sam?
Yeah, it's so, if you're starting, from scratch, you've got a new piece of ground, then you're always going to need to do some primary tillage to be able to get that ground ready to plant, your crops in. However, after that, I really advocate for minimal tillage because, as you said, it has a lot of destructive capabilities, and, it, a lot of people see a lot of success after tilling, and it's because all the microbiology, everything that you've disturbed kind of dies. So your plants will feed off of that. But over time, the more that you till, the more damage you can do in creating a plow pan or destroying that microbiology that we've been so focused on building. So really till as little as possible.
So you mentioned, Paula, compost or composting and putting the compost product on
yes.
on your garden because that helps add some organic health to the soil. Some people believe that nature provides everything we already need in terms of organic matter. That includes leaves. So what do you say about leaves? Are we overdoing it? Should we rake our leaves? Or if we rake our leaves off the grass, should we throw it into the garden, or should we have the lawnmower mulch it and pour that into the garden? What's your word there?
Yeah, so I mean, leaves are nutrients. They do hold nutrients. And so by them dropping out in nature without our input, that is exactly what's happening, is they're going back to feed. So I say leave the leaves, but exactly what you say, how do you leave the leaves? Certainly on the lawn, they're not necessarily, leaving a big layer of leaves is not going to help your lawn if that's what you're after. So I would be an advocate there of, yes, getting them up with the lawnmower or chopping them, however, and putting them onto your, underneath your trees and in your flower beds. With anything, you don't want to mulch too deeply. So if you are in a very, very, very shaded spot, of course, then you're probably not going to have a whole lot of super successful lawn. You don't want to overdo it, but I'm a big advocate of leaving the leaves. And if you find yourself with too many, you can chop them up and just put them in a pile, like it's like a compost mm-hmm. pile, and let them kind of break down until they create their own kind of compost called leaf mold. And then you could use that in your vegetable garden, or you could use it in your flower bed.
David, aside from what mulching leaves looks like, as opposed to the tree bark and the pine straw and the other things that we can buy in bags at stores like yours, what's the difference between buying it in a bag and letting the tree leaves that fall in the fall just sit there where you've put them?
Well, what you really want to do in your garden is try to imitate the forest. If you walk into some woods, right on top, you see some sticks or sticker balls and maybe a dead squirrel and all that sort of stuff. You kick that out of the way, you see some things that look kind of like leaves, but they're almost rotted. You kick away a little more, like if you're going to build a campfire, and you get to the black stuff or the brown stuff. That's basically what your compost is. You go a little deeper and you find the red clay. So that stratification is how trees feed themselves. They bring all the nutrients from the subsoil up and drop their leaves and feed themselves. So if you can do that in your garden by low tilling, and by mulching and letting the mulch decompose and turn black, trees don't drop 4 feet of leaves. They drop just a little bit. So in your yard, as Paula says, if you put your leaves around your trees and shrubs, don't put them any deeper than you would find them in the forest. And then don't worry about it. Mother Nature will take care of everything.
So Sam, is that healthier than going out and buying bags of mulch?
Well, it certainly can be cheaper if you've got, you know, leaves that are falling on your property. And, you know, it's kind of, as you know, David was saying, it's, you know, you want to imitate the forest. So, you know, if you're able to leave those leaves around the base of your trees, then that's essentially, they are, you know, dropping those to feed themselves over the winter. So, you know, if you take them away, then you're kind of stripping the trees of those nutrients and of that blanket that they're laying down that they want. There, you know, there's no harm in, adding mulch or buying mulch, you know, do as needed and take care of your landscape. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, leaving those in place and, you know, keeping that mulch, especially around your woody perennials. I would also say, I see a lot of people going really deep with their mulch and it and doing kind of like a volcano, if you will. If you see that kind of volcano looking mulch around your tree, you need to spread that out because you can really set yourself up for some problems down the road.
So let's get to some listener questions that have been coming in as we've been talking. Chris asks, when is the best time to plant perennial flower seeds and bulbs like tulips and lilies? I know that this is the time of year when you take out some bulbs and put them in storage, and it's also the time of year when you plant certain bulbs. So Paula, guide us.
Yes, so for tulips and daffodils and that sort of thing, between now and mid-December, when you want to do that. So spring flowering bulbs, this is the time. No rush, like I usually tend to do it in November, but anytime between now and mid-December. As far as seeds go, certain reseeding annuals or biennials you could seed right now, I tend to want to have seeded those a little bit earlier than now.
Okay. Mary and Tammy ask Paula, what are your three favorite native plants for the Charlotte landscape?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard because there's so many. Well, first of all, I really like an advocate for blueberries for various reasons. They're larval host plants. That means that the caterpillars that turn into certain butterflies feed on their leaves. They like our acid soils that we have. They have good fall color and they have blueberries. So I'm a big advocate of blueberries. I love the bee balms, especially the native Monarda fistulosa bee balm. So that would be one of my top ones that I recommend to people. And then something for fall, like an aster. A fall blooming aster is also sort of this, it's like a multitasking plant in your ecological landscape. So it's beautiful and it, you know, is very beneficial to insects.
We haven't talked about this and I want to in a second. And that is what you should harvest, what old plants need to come out and what old plants should stay for a while, because evidently they are they provide a home for certain kinds of insects over the winter and including pollinators. We have a question about pollinators, David, from one of our Facebook listeners. Does Renfro sell any pollinator-friendly ground covers like clovers that would work in a suburban lawn?
Oh, yes. There are four or five clovers that do well in this part of the country. The most popular would be White Dutch, which is a short growing clover that can grow in a lawn and survive at lawn mowing height. We have just as many people trying to kill clover as we do having to plant clover. So I'm a big advocate of White Dutch. Crimson clover is an annual that you can get rid of in a garden. You would be planting crimson clover now. Ladino is a tall growing perennial white clover that's sort of a meadow, like a farmer would cut hay with. Those are three good choices. And there are others. And as Paula says, some of the Monardias and some of the other seeded or planted perennials are great pollinator attractors. Blue basil is just crack cocaine for pollinators. So there are lots of plants that you can put out different seasons. So that's a good question. If you want to attract pollinators, use your lawn to attract a lot of them by clover, or even quit killing the dandelions. Leave everything there, the henbit, all of that.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, because people spend a fortune eradicating dandelions and clover from their lawns. Are they misguided?
Yes, basically, yes. But that's something I would not do in my lawn, never have. But some of these neighborhood covenants require you to have weed-free lawns, and that's a good reason to move. Go somewhere you don't have to do that.
I want to point out that everybody on this panel is nodding. Yes, they are misguided. Leave your lawns alone, essentially. But what you're talking about here, between leaving your lawns with weeds in them and also using leaves in your natural areas as mulch, as opposed to pine bark and other things that people put down, which give it that deep, dark, at least in the spring at first, rich, highly defined area. You're talking about being a little sloppy here, aren't you?
Well, not necessarily.
I think you got to learn which government authority to listen to. Listen to Cooperative Extension instead of the zoning people, and I think you'll be better off environmentally, at least. And that's impossible to do, but listen to what Sam's group is telling you, and you'll be well off.
But so, also, this was talked about on your rewilding episode, that doesn't mean it's not neat.
Right.
You can use those. You absolutely can use those wood mulches. You absolutely can define the edges of your garden. It's just some of these other practices you're trying to balance the ecology in your yard with your aesthetic preference. So you do not have to let it be messy. You can neaten it up.
Well, when we were kids and you'd run through the yard barefooted, you had to really be careful not to step on a lot of bees. Now you run through a yard that's got clover and you don't see many bees. That should tell you that we need to do more to attract the wildlife.
And we've talked about this before too. You don't see a lot of insects anymore. And if you're old enough to remember driving anywhere in a car in the summer, there would be bugs all over the windshield and bugs all over the grill, and that doesn't happen anymore. Take a break. We'll talk more about fall gardening with our three gardening experts here in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about fall gardening with Paula Gross, former associate director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Garden and author of the Southeast Native Plant Primer, 225 Plants for an Earth-Friendly Garden. David Blackley is owner of Renfro Hardware, a legend in its own time, out in Matthews. And Sam Humphrey is the horticultural agent with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension. We were talking about lawns before the break, Sam. What I'm hearing a lot of you say is don't do anything to those lawns. Leave them alone. Let the weeds grow wild. But what should people be doing right now if they want a healthy golf course lawn in the spring and summer?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, we're not saying necessarily don't do anything. It depends upon what your goals are and as you act as an ecosystem manager. But for, you know, for your lawns that are, you know, it really depends upon what type of grass you have as far as what maintenance or, you know, what you're going to be doing going into the winter. I'd suggest, you know, checking out the NCSU lawn publications and our maintenance calendars. We have some really great calendars for, you know, your fescues, your zoysia grass, you know, all these different turf grasses that are very common. But, you know, generally things are starting to go more dormant. You want to, you know, lower, you're not really going to be fertilizing as much or at all. You want to lower your, you know, any sort of herbicide applications, anything that you're doing like that. You're going to want to really back off and, you know, and probably, you know, water more with the weather rather than just having those sprinklers automated, sharpen your mower blades, you know, a lot of different things you can do to really, you know, prevent disease as well as set your lawn up for success going into the winter.
You didn't mention aeration or seeding.
Yeah. So, you know, if that's what you need on your lawn, you know, it's always going to be context specific and, you know, dependent upon what type of turf grass that you have. You know, I think that aeration, you know, can be important, but, and as well as, you know, reseeding, but right now we're kind of, if you haven't already reseeded, we're kind of coming up on it on that threshold. So, you know, you might be better off waiting, especially if it's a real slow growing grass.
So Mary asks, we are moving to a new home in the middle of October. What plants would you put along a fence for privacy? Something that would grow quickly, densely, and be manageable for years. Anybody? Paula.
Well, there are, you know, evergreen plants for sure that you can do. I'm, you know, very much an advocate of the native plants. And as I said earlier, this is not really the time to install large evergreens. So I would say if they can hold off, if they want to get a good start with a big plant, so they want quick screen, something like a Carolina cherry laurel is a good one. Something, you know, you can do a Eastern red cedar, you can do a cryptomeria, which is not a native plant, but if you want to start out large, wait till spring.
Yeah. Sam, climate change has been changing things. That's a nice way of putting it, a redundant way of putting it. Summers are longer, it seems. Winters are warmer. Have growing seasons here altered to any great degree because of that?
You know, I think you're going to see a lot more extremes throughout the seasons. You know, our wet periods will be wetter, our dry periods drier. You know, summers are hotter, winters are going to be colder. So, you know, for me and for, you know, what I recommend, it's always about building resiliency into the ecosystem that you're managing. We need to be prepared for these climate shifts, for these, you know, crazy weather patterns and all these types of things. So really it's about building resiliency, and that can be redundancy into your system so that you will be, you know, prepared for, you know, these extreme weather events and all these changes that are occurring.
And David, we seem to have either no rain at all or so much rain we can't handle it. Are there plants that you know about that you recommend to people who come into you that seem to not care about these extremes?
Sure. I think what you bring is a good point. The variety selection is important. And with the advent of, particularly with big box stores that are bringing in plants from all over the country, sometimes you'll see a variety there that's not right for our area. It goes back to cooperative extension. NC State and Clemson have all of that figured out. We talk a lot about climate change, but one thing that hasn't changed is the length of the day year round, and the plants are all tuned to the length of the day. You might get a cloudy day for a rain or something. So in my 40 years, we haven't seen an appreciable difference on when you plant your sugar peas or when you plant your tomatoes or when you plant your blueberries. You just have to build in, as Sam says, some resiliency if you're going to be dry or going to be wet or maybe not going to have good drainage because of where your house was built, they scraped away all the topsoil. But Mother Nature is pretty smart and pretty resilient if you pick the right varieties. And that just means getting advice from people that know what they're talking about.
It occurs to me, not only is the sun changing with the time of year, with shorter days and less sunshine and the angle of the sun being different in the winter than it is in the summer, it also, the leaves fall off the trees. So some of your beds may get more sunshine in the wintertime than they
exactly
do in the summertime. So what's the impact of that, and how should you plant for that?
Best place that you can plant something where the leaves are falling off early. My wife has a garden behind the kitchen that does real well in the winter. And what you typically try to do is plant something where you're eating the plant versus a product of the plant. So if you can grow lettuce or spinach or Swiss chard in a lower light condition, you will be just fine. And you could have put it out a month ago. If you're going to try to grow a great big cauliflower head or something, you're going to need more sun. So you're going to have to plant it in an area that is sunny all the time. But planting the right plants in the right little area, again, should yield you something every day. Just be observant. Look at when the leaves fall. Maybe write it down in a notebook and look at where the shadows fall in November versus August. Pay attention like your grandparents did.
The last time you were here, David, I think it was during the pandemic, the last time you were here, you talked about the Renfro Hardware producing Poor Renfro's Almanac. Are you still doing that? Because in that almanac, you talked about what's on the, you had a whole list of things, among them Swiss chard that you just mentioned, I think, and kale that you could plant right now, mixed greens and beets and peas and cover crops. Is that still true? All of that's still true?
All that's true. That's true from now through January, really. So we have really basically 4.5 or 5 seasons of where we live here, and there's always something to plant. The Renfro's Almanac would be on our website, or we give paper handouts of it. And essentially what it is we take every day that's a holiday, New Year's Day, Valentine's Day, ACC Tournament Day, Tax Day, all that sort of thing, and tell you what you should be picking and what you should be planting. Comes to about 15 or 20 holidays.
Now, here's something I didn't think I would be talking about today until I read it yesterday on the North Carolina Extension Service website, that if you're growing tomatoes, Sam, you can wrap green tomatoes in newspaper and store them in a cool, dry place before the first frost, so you'll have fresh tomatoes into December. Do they ripen on their own?
Yep, they definitely will. And, you know, that's kind of some of these older techniques that we, you know, that we forget about. And so just as you're pulling those tomatoes off the vine, as you're cleaning up your garden, don't just throw them in your compost pile. You know, if they're still green, you can, as you said, wrap them in newspaper, store them in a cool, dry, dark place, and you'll be able to, you know, you'll get be able to, you know, eat those later, as well as if you have a tomato that has a little bit of color on the very bottom of it, we call that a first blush. And once they get that first color on there, you can just set those on your countertop and your, you know, in your kitchen or what have you. And those will ripen up just like they would on the vine.
So if you pick them right now, if you got green tomatoes right now, if you pick them between now and the first frost, you can keep them until, what did I say, November, December? December, and they'll be fine to eat.
Yeah. And wow. So I will say that all green tomatoes are not equal. You can have immature green tomatoes that don't have the gel inside of them. They're, you know, they're not wet inside. Those are a more immature. You're not really going to have success with those. They need to be a more mature green tomato about to give you that first blush and show that true first color for you to be able to do that.
Let's go back and talk about these.
Take those first blush ones and maybe before Christmas and put them in a paper bag with a couple of apples. Apples let off ethylene gas, and we can have homegrown tomatoes on New Year's and Christmas if you plant it right. And the ones that are still green, you just fry them. Fry green tomatoes.
Can you do that to grocery store tomatoes, or is it worth doing because they're all terrible?
I've never bought a grocery store tomato. I wouldn't know.
I'll be calling Harris Teeter after this is over. let's tattling on you. A listener question, because we were talking about perennials and some of the things this time of year, the spent plants, some of them should come out. Some of them should not, Paula. And we have a listener asking, should I cut back my perennials now or wait until spring? What's the rule?
Okay, so it depends on a couple things. If your perennials you're noticing harboring a lot of pest or disease, you can go ahead and cut those back and not leave that in the garden. Take that out. You can take it and compost it. You can, you know, toss it away, just not composting it right there in your garden. If your perennials still have seed heads on them, I like to leave them. They're nature's bird feeders. You can leave them for at least another month and then you can cut them down. It depends on your aesthetic, but as far as for the health of your garden, I like to, whatever I cut down, I like to chop up and leave there again, unless it was diseased. And I do like to leave a few stalks. So some of your perennials that have nice upright stalks, not all floppy and messy, leave some of that because beneficial insects can harbor in there. There are advantages to that. So it's really a balance of, you know, what you enjoy, but think about leaving the seed heads for about another month and then leaving a few very nice, neat, tidy type stalks in your garden.
And when would you take them out, in the spring?
Yes. Yes. So February, March.
So last time you were here, David, it was pandemic time and we were talking about some trends that were going on then. And among those trends was people coming into Renfro and buying chickens. I guess they wanted to avoid the grocery store and they wanted fresh eggs and that's how they got them. Has that continued, or have some of the other habits that people picked up during the pandemic continued, or is that all a forgotten memory?
All those habits have continued. Mostly people were at home and their kids were at home. So they gardened and did chickens and did blueberries or whatnot. And most everybody actually had good success in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. So we haven't seen a let up. We've seen more canning going on this year than we have in the last two or three years. Not just because that's what you do, but because people are really trying to be healthy. They're trying to be more in control of what they eat and what their children eat. I'm amazed at how many sort of 30-something moms are really getting into this gardening because of the children. So it's a good strand. I think there's some good has come out of that lockdown.
So it doesn't get as hot in the wintertime, Sam, as it does in the summer, clearly. So I assume that you can water whatever you're planting now less, but should you stop altogether when the temperatures fall? Because water freezes, and I'm told that if you plant certain plants, the freezing water in the soil can push those plant root balls up and out of the soil. What's the rule of thumb on watering?
Yeah, so, you know, in the winter, temperatures drop. You know, you have a lot less, you know, as David has said, lower sun length times, you know, days are shortening. So you have a lot less photosynthetic capability for those plants. So your water consumption drops significantly. They still need access to liquid water. That's still important for the plants to grow properly. But, you know, you can really, you know, take that back, especially if we're having a really wet winter. I would always check the soil moisture before you're going to water, because overwatering in the winter can really lead to some issues, you know, so they still need water, but you really want to be cautious about overwatering in the winter.
And I read yesterday, you shouldn't be using your sprinkler system and things like that, but you should go out with a watering can or a hose and give a good dose to the root balls of plants on the warmer days, so they have that liquid water that you're
talking about. That's correct. I mean, they just, you know, whether you're a plant or an animal, you always need liquid water to grow, and the winter time's no different. You just have, you know, you're watering at different times and using different methods.
I have an important question from a listener on Facebook. Do the mosquito eradication sprays that so many people get now kill pollinators? Should we be worried about spraying for bugs like mosquitoes in the fall? Sam?
Yeah, so it depends upon what you're spraying, because every chemical is different. I always tell folks, you know, the label is the law. And so if you are spraying for mosquitoes, then a lot of times those chemicals will, you know, have detrimental effects to your pollinators. There are some that are, you know, not going to be quite as harmful to your pollinators, but it really depends on how much you're spraying, where you're spraying, when you're spraying, what's that pressure, where's the wind. I mean, if you're being real loose with it and you're allowing a lot of drift and you're over spraying, then you're going to cause a lot of issues to those pollinators. So I really the label is the law.
I have 30 seconds left, Sam. Give your address again for the people who want the soil testing kits.
Yeah, so our address is 2415 Lester Street in Charlotte, North Carolina, right off of West Boulevard.
Sam Humphrey is the horticultural agent for the Mecklenburg, or for the North Carolina Cooperative Extension. Paula Gross is author of The Southeast Native Plant Primer, 225 Plants for an Earth-Friendly Garden. And David Blackley is the owner of the legendary Renfro Hardware in Matthews. Thank you all.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.